タンタカタンタンタカタンタンタカタンタンタカタントン。あっけしくんぬい将来かっくみすみだめのぼり別神栄別極真打たない下川県別わっさむあっとこうしゃまんべパシクルチリップ来吉くっちゃんタンタカポンポロと北平村南ポロばっかいホロマン。
She's wearing like this peacock sequence capey thing withcow print pants, no shoes.
クジラ見える丘公園投げ真っ赤牛の中光ごけ湧かないで What's your head? ノットがっかり札幌と携帯冬はサビーな暗いマルちゃん焼きそば弁当
Up on a ladder, like 25 feet high with planets all around it. Like, what is this? This is peacock elf lady. I'm under a blanket. I just, where am I? How did I get here? Like, I love my life. Hello everyone, David here from Japan 2.0. Today we're going to do kind of an interesting episode, kind of a one-off, who knows, maybe we'll do it again. Basically, it's a live show review and a kind of extensive look at one show in particular. We've done a show before that covered just live music in general in Japan, but this one's just going to be a view of only one artist, Wednesday Campanella. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope it kind of gives you a look into kind of what, you know, I think everyone, something that we all love to do, go to see a live show, what that's like in Japan and maybe how it's different from the country you're familiar with, or maybe you're living in Japan and, you know, this show in particular was very unique. I've been to, I don't know, somewhere around 40 or 50 shows in Japan and never quite saw one like this. So hopefully you learn something new from it. If not, you'll definitely like the music, I think, from Wednesday Campanella. We'll be featuring a lot of tracks from them. We're recording this the day after we actually saw the concert. So I'm going to record my piece, and then you'll get to hear from Matt as well, kind of separately. The musician's name is, in English, Wednesday Campanella. And Suyobi no Campanella in Japanese. We've been pretty big fans of her for a while now. I want to say I started following her about a year or two after they formed as a band. In 2012 they formed, and I probably found them around 2014 or so. And yeah, we went to this show last night, and it was just really awesome. And I kind of just wanted to share our feelings about that. We did a whole show in the past about live music. If you check out the blog posts for this podcast, I'll make sure to link it in there so you can easily find it, where we just kind of give a major overview of like what going to live music's like in Japan. And that one was, you know, we don't really have a controversial show or anything, but if we get one or two comments of people disagreeing, for us, that's like, whoa, you know, because generally what we're saying is pretty, you know, neutral, and people just tend to agree. But that was one of the few shows we ever had where some people I know, you know, in real life who listen to the show would actually come up to me and say, what? You know, we were generally pretty positive about live music here. And some people I know were not as positive about that. But I kind of thought if we gave a really focused view of a show, like the whole experience, you know, not just like reviewing the music, it might kind of give you like kind of a next level take on that, or kind of be like the 2.0 version for Japan 2.0. So I kind of just want to get into the artist too. So in some ways it might be a bit of like a musician focus as well. So before I kind of jump in the going to the show and detailing all that, I just want to tell you a little bit about Wednesday Campanella themselves. So I say themselves because it's actually not one person. I think it's a pretty common misconception that the female vocalist, a lot of these names I'm going to kind of butcher, by the way, because I've never heard anyone say them before. Female vocalist, the name, her stage name she goes by is Kam underscore I. So I don't know if that's Kami or Kamai. Yeah, she's the only one ever featured publicly, whether that's on stage or in music videos. So a lot of people think it's a solo act, but it's actually three people. So there's two producers behind her. There is a guy named Director F. D-I-R-F is always how his name is spelled out. I'm going to guess that's Director F. And there is a third member as well. And the third member is actually pretty important. Hidefume-san is his name.
He was a producer at Nujabes record label Hideout Productions. If you don't know Nujabes, super famous, maybe like top five, top three Japanese DJs, producers in the last 30 years. My personal favorite. He's kind of one of the people who influenced the kind of lo-fi kind of hip-hop sound or lo-fi beats like a lot of people study to now, and I hear it's gone pretty mainstream. But he was one of the first doing that. So anyway, Hidefuma-san worked for that label, and he paired up with this Director F guy, and they kind of decided, like, hey, we want to make a new project in 2011. And they even had the name right away. So they had the name before the actual female vocalist was there that we all know. It took them about a year to find her, and they're actually looking for three girls. They wanted to like kind of make like a girl group, but they met her at a house party, and my understanding is that she's still a senior in high school, so and these guys are 10 years older than her, so I don't know what kind of house party that was at with high school seniors, but yeah, and she had no musical experience at all, no singing experience at all. But for whatever reason, they decided to like try to make it work together. And pretty soon after, you know, they were pretty successful straight out the gate in terms of like, you know, an internet kind of cult following. Shimane Kitazawa is a really artistic music kind of underground neighborhood in Tokyo. And in 2012, that's one of the or early 2013, that's kind of like where they got their following, and they had like a local you know, cult following there, and that's kind of a place where a lot of bands are born out of, so they're I think pretty lucky to get their following there. They have all these mini albums early on, and their music has changed a lot. It's only been, you know, 4 or 5 years since their inception, but they have really changed a lot. So those early albums are kind of more like a hip hop, not at all like hardcore underground hip hop or anything, but like a, I don't know, kind of like just a playful electro kind of hip hop sound to them, quite raw and independent. And then now today, I've always referred to her as kind of like the Japanese Bjork, and she used to kind of show glimpses of that before, but she's definitely going more in that direction now with, again, still like the EDM background, but it's more for me, this is a point of contention among Matt and myself, it's more among the lines of like trap influence that's been going on, you know, in popular music for like the last 5 or 6 years. I will say she uses different instrumentation in that, where you get maybe some more traditional Japanese sounds or even like it sounds like Indian instruments or very worldly music, which has always been a theme with them. But the general like composition and stuff for me on her later stuff's gone a little bit mainstream, so I'll kind of get into that maybe a bit later. But I definitely prefer her earlier work. My favorite song is one called Momotaro, and it's probably her most famous song. She has another song all about Sapporo, and one unique thing about them is that they get sponsored a lot to make music, which is kind of interesting, especially for like, you know, someone I kind of consider indie or artsy or underground. From the Western mentality, at least, like if you're getting sponsored by these big companies to make your music and make songs about a city or make songs about curry ramen is another. They have a song called La, and it's paid for by Nissan Ramen Noodles about curry ramen, and they sing about that. And these aren't like just kind of one-off commercials, but these are like legit songs that a lot of people like. For me, the Sapporo song is, you know, possibly my favorite, maybe my number two from her. Another earlier song, Momotaro, is awesome. The music video is great. I'll play that one now for you.
シボカートバーチャンリバーでウォッシュ僕お家にこもったゲームPC エンジンバイハドソン毎日遊べる夏休みイージーモードのエブリデイ高橋名人バンギリングベイ天外魔境2ファミコン1日1時間でもPC エンジン3時間メガドライブネオジオゲームボーイアドバンス勉強宿題そっちのけじいちゃんばあちゃんもうカンカン団子を投げつけ言いました毎日ゴロゴロしてるような顔鬼ヶ島にでも行きなさい 祖父母の怒りを買い家を追い出された太郎少年、渡されたのは岡山県名物きびだんご。ただそれだけ。ぬるい人生を歩んできた彼に鬼は退治できるのか。太郎少年の運命やいかに。
So music like that is really awesome. I think a kind of defining feature of them is that the topics they talk about, again, especially in the earlier stuff, so ranging from like 2013 to 15, which is all the songs I've just talked about now, are very Japanese. Again, talking about a specific kind of curry ramen, talking about a city in Japan deeply, like all the like small nuanced, I'm assuming, I'm not from Sapporo, but it sounds like it'd be stuff that like really like the locals know, you know, a lot of colloquial terms in there. And then Momotaro, she's going through old school video games like PC Engine, even of course Famicom, and talking about Sentos and Onisans and Dango, all very, very heavily Japanese things that I think, you know, if you know those things, once you kind of live here in Japan, there are like everyday life things you just see in your neighborhood. Or, you know, my son always comes home with Onisan mask and is telling me about different kinds of, you know, Kappa Oni. Or so, yeah, look at their music videos and kind of look at the imagery and start to look up some of that stuff. Momotaro is a really good entry point because the lyrics have been translated into English on the bottom if you turn on captions on the official video. So it's kind of a good way to kind of learn about Japanese culture. And I think that's why I like them, is they're like, you don't really think of electro kind of female hip hop vocals teaching you something, you know? But they are kind of these like champions of Japanese culture and maybe, you know, bringing it to a new generation. So yeah, super cool group. For me, they were kind of one of the first of these female kind of poppy independent musicians with hip-hop delivery. When I came across them, I thought it was really unique. I never heard anything like that before in 2013. And since then, there's just been a slew and a wave, and it's almost becoming kind of like a trope. There's like a whole category of like cutesy female lead singer with like some guys, you know, making the music behind them, and hip hop delivery. Not really talented always. So yeah, there's a juxtaposition of really nice crafted music a lot of times with, you know, not the tightest hip hop bars that you've ever heard before. But that's kind of always been a Japanese genre that Matt and I are fond of, all the way back to Shibomato would probably be the most classic example of kind of abrasive or non-conventional lyrical delivery. That something about it is just different, and it kind of grows on you and sticks with you. They actually don't work together, the group, the three members, often. They don't like sit down and meet and record an album, at least early on. Her bigger two albums, it seems more like major label style, was one called Superman, and that one came out in around 2016, I want to say. And then last year in 2017, maybe even early 2018, Galapagos came out. And both of those, I think, are technically EPs, so around like 8 songs, 9 songs only. But they're definitely her big kind of breakout, where like students at my school even know who she is. And she's definitely, the whole group is becoming quite popular, but still, you know, not everyone knows them, but people who are in the know. So I think it's kind of crazy that they said that they YouTube each other. Like, she'll just send a YouTube video of herself telling them, here's a direction I want to take on a song. Can you make music like this? And then they send her something back, and they kind of work back and forth on YouTube. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe she's left Tokyo, or one of the members has or something. But as far as I understood, they had all met in Tokyo. So these are some of the trials and tribulations when you don't speak Japanese in Japan, that you kind of get limited information on things. But hopefully what I was able to kind of tell you now, that's like looking around a lot and kind of bringing all the English information I could find together over a couple of years. So hopefully that brings you up to speed, at least to what's out there in English.
Hi guys, this is Matt here, and I'm here to talk about the Wednesday Campanella concert that I went to. I was really excited to see Wednesday Campanella in concert because I've been a fan of her music since David hit me to her probably about, 5 or 6 years ago. And we've enjoyed listening to her her rap style and her music production. And I'm really impressed by her music production because it's very different than most modern hip-hop or modern trap artists, you know, where she's using a lot of tribal instrumentation and Japanese instruments in her compositions. And so musically, like, I've been a big fan for a long time, so I've never seen her perform live. I know David had a chance to see her, and I was aware that she had these very engaging performances where she got in with the crowd and was interacting. So she'd get into like this giant bubble or ball and then bounce around the crowd, kind of crowd surf or crowd dive or sing with the audience, you know, around her, or climb a ladder. And I've heard of these things, but I had never seen it. And so but other than that, I didn't really know what to expect. And because I don't usually see concerts that have, you know, it's just like a woman singing, and I usually go to like bands or performances. So I've never seen Bjork or somebody like that where, you know, the highlight is to watch them sing, you know. It's kind of like, I don't know, to me I think of jazz lounge singers, you know, where they're just behind the microphone and just kind of moving around. And when the concert began, it kind of was that for a while. But what made her stand out was her production values, which I think David and my wife thought were kind of cheap or kind of, I guess cheap. But I thought they did really well was do a lot with the little. So there was a big nylon sheet behind Wednesday Campanella, and the wind was blowing and moving the sheet, and they were projecting lights onto it and smoke, and it really made like an interesting backdrop. And it kind of was very psychedelic, you know. Once the lights were turned on and the rainbow colors were on this sheet, it was moving back and forth, and it was kind of, it looked like a acid trip, you know, from some sort of 60s music video or something. And so even though it wasn't like the biggest budget of all time, it really made that mood, it made it work. It really matched her singing style. And then they also had some interactive portions of the concert where we were all under this nylon tent, and she was singing in the middle, and she came into the audience, and she got on this ladder and was holding up this tent, and everybody at the concert were all under this tent, and we were trying to pick it up so we could see her. That was a really interesting use of, you know, a limited budget, and to make an very intimate portion of the concert. I mean, it really made us feel like we were, I don't know, it felt like playing camp, you know, when you're a kid and you get all the sheets and you pull them over your head and you make a little fort or something. It felt kind of like that. And I felt that I was impressed by especially the second portion of the concert when it became more interactive and she was playing around on off of the stage and in with the audience, and she's climbing ladders and rapping from the rafters, and I don't know if it was necessarily safe. My wife and I were talking earlier today about how security still seemed pretty lax, and this is a performer who's, you know, throughout the concert there were some weird heckles, like, not, I don't know if it was heckling, but it was kind of, it seemed like some inappropriate things were being shouted at her. And, you know, it makes me a little nervous to see this, you know, 5 foot, if she was even 5 foot, she seemed pretty small, Japanese singer, you know, just mixed in the whole crowd. And when she came into the crowd, she was really near David, Emily and I, and everybody started to kind of bum rush, you know, the area, not too aggressively. I mean, I've been to concerts where people are really pushing you around, but you know, some people were really, you know, wanted to get as close as they possibly could. And I guess it made me a little bit nervous. I think that's part of the appeal of her show, for better or worse, is that she does some things that seem, I don't know, probably like slightly dangerous to her own health. You know, she's climbing these ladders. It's just a rickety, like, work ladder. And she's standing on top of it with no rails, nothing else to hold on to except the top of the building. And at times, like, her legs were shaking and the ladder was shaking with her, you know, as she's keeping her balance. But I mean, it made for an excellent performance. And I think part of the appeal is, like, is something going to happen? You know, it's like watching something dangerous. I think in the Katamari episode that we posted not that long ago, I was talking about this artistic idea of a child running with scissors and how that's cute, but it's also very dangerous. And there's something cute and dangerous about watching something like that, you know, where you know it's so terrifying that you can't look away, right? Well, I guess she kind of puts herself in these situations that are slightly dangerous, and you just really can't look away from it. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely see her again. I thought, like, the way she exited, she walked into one of these nylon sheets that was kind of set up in another part of the room, and it looked like almost like a procession. You know, she was kind of just walking through the crowd very stoically, and she walks into the sheet and disappears. And it was almost like it's performance art, but it was almost like a magician as well. And it really fits her aesthetic, you know, the very moody kind of surreal imagery and surreal singing, you know, style. Very, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to say new age, but I guess it kind of has that kind of spiritual feel to it. And yeah, I thought that it was an amazing show, and I'd hope to see her again. Once again, I wish, you know, security is, I hope security was a little, you know, stronger. I think with 2020 Olympics coming up, you know, it makes me think about just being safe at concerts like this. I think being an American and knowing about all the shootings and stabbings and stuff that have been going on in concerts, you know, and being aware of that, you know, it makes me a little more cautious about security. And I think that the security there wasn't great. In one way, that's something I love about Japan, is that, you know, it's still relatively safe. But at some point, you know, I know something is going to happen, and then that's all going to change, and we're all going to have to consider whether or not it would be a good thing to have tight security at concerts like this. I don't want to end on a bummer. I think that part of the risk in the concert was what made it special. And I think that, you know, it takes an amazing performer and a very brave person to do a performance like that. So if I'm going to end with anything, I think I should end with that. Pick up Galapagos. It's a great record. I really enjoy it. Wednesday Campanella. Check her out. And yeah, next time I'll see you guys with David, and we'll be recording more podcasts. Till next time. Peace. ストラタスやさ情報
シュシュ欠かせないトラックマンもラグじゃないトレセン取材鼻頭首着散微妙三歳馬の頂上ですできれば大卒ゲット勝ちたいね十橋沈みゆく太陽の十倍もはや黒い風のように走
り Friday. It's a tough day at work.I run an after school club where we're having this really big event. It's tied to kind of a big international, well known group that anyone would know the name of this organization. And I'm getting the kids ready for it. It's 1 week away. It's kind of stressful. I have to tell some kids, yeah, sorry, you're not going to make the cut. We're 1 week away. You don't have your lines memorized. You're not going to be able to, you know, perform at this event. So I'm getting through all that.And run out of work, you know, kids need more work, but I'm just telling them, oh yeah, it's good, you're gonna have to finish that later, it's 5 o'clock, I gotta go see my concert, you know, and I run out the doors, and I go and buy my discount ticket, because I'm cheap like that, and the lady at the ticket stand is like, trying to tell me this great story about how I look like Macaulay Culkin and her friend told her I look like Macaulay Culkin and it's kind of bugging me out because that's something I used to hear a lot about 25 years ago and can't believe it's followed me to Japan. But as I'm just trying to say, oh, hi, yeah, okay, great. She later says it has something to do with Facebook and I say, okay, maybe I wrote something about that on Facebook. I don't know. Craziness is happening. This can tell you kind of what my mood's like. It's like being shot out of a cannon, trying to get from the outside of Kobe all the way into Namba at Universe, which is an amazing, amazing club. You know, top three I've ever been to in the world. And trying to get there by 7 o'clock. Doors at this thing are supposed to open at 7. Sorry, doors open at 6. The show goes on at 7. So I rush out, I probably get on the train at 5:15. I'm thinking, all right, it says I should get there at 6:30. Just enough time to grab a famichiki, get some food in my belly so I can have some drinks at the show. And I run up there and I get there at like 6:40. You know, things are supposed to go on in 20 minutes. I'm thinking like, I'm just gonna rush in and be at the back, you know, but nope, no one's been letting to the show yet. So I get in contact with Matt and Emily, and they're like, oh, yeah, there's, like, some crazy line system where they look at a number on your ticket. But most people buy their tickets from these convenience store machines. It's kind of like an ATM machine, and it's always placed right next to the ATM machine. And whenever you have to use this machine, it's a whole headache. Maybe we'll talk about it in their podcast. But it's a little difficult to get these tickets. But it is cool. I can just walk 45 seconds out my door to the convenience store and buy, you know, a live concert ticket for kind of a smaller artist, which is cool. But yeah, there's some numbering system, which I've gone to so many shows and it's only ever happened one time before and it was not pretty. So I knew it was going to be a little bit annoying and it's pretty unorganized. And Japan has this reputation for, I think, you know, being very organized and having a lot of systems in place to stop any kind of, you know, unorganization, for lack of a better word. And yeah, it didn't really feel like the best way to organize things. And we didn't get in until about actually 20 minutes after the show didn't start until about 20 minutes after 7. We're tired. And at this point, we're kind of hitting like this lull, right? We're all rushing to get out there, out of work. And it was kind of a weird start, honestly. But once we get in, this venue in Namba Universe, so amazing. I've talked about it before on the show, but just being in that space, you know, it's like a time warp. It's very art deco, 60s, 70s style, psychedelic, crazy thing. I don't know. Words don't do it justice. Look up some photos of Universe Osaka. And yeah, instantly it's just feeling really good in there. And it's actually not that crowded. There's like the way area you stand in is kind of like a stage. It's like raised above the ground and there's like guardrail all around it. And then there's more of like a bar area and kind of like a lounge area surrounding that. So for me, there are people who are off that stage area trying to watch the show, but I want to, you know, be up kind of on the raised ground as close as I can get in there. And you know, we probably could have pushed Sharuhei up to the front, but I don't know. It's not that kind of show. And Japan's not that kind of place. Sometimes you get shows where people are doing that there. But the vibe here, you know, is a little bit it was very eclectic, you know. There was probably people in their 60s there. There was like straight, you know, probably high school students there. More non-Japanese than I would have thought for her. I didn't know she was kind of getting that big with the non-Japanese crowd. But I would say, like, I'm going to guess just offhanded, maybe there's 400 people there, 500 people there. I'll say, I'm going to guess 500. And of those 500, maybe 50 were non-Japanese. So what's that, 10%, 8%? For Osaka, that's kind of rare. So I was surprised and kind of happy to see that. So anyway, I don't know, just didn't feel quite right to kind of push forward. So we were kind of in the back. I think Emily, who's a little bit shorter than Matt and myself, she's maybe five, I'm going to guess, sorry, Emily, I'm going to guess she's around 5'8 or so. So she's maybe 5'9. She's not short by any means. But I think she had a hard time seeing kind of in the back. We're waiting for the show to start, kind of getting all excited. There's lots of like lights on the stage and it's very colorful. And of course, Universe has the planet system, actual like 3D models of planets hanging above in the ceiling, and they're doing their thing, spinning around. And it's definitely a artsy vibe from the get-go. And for a long time, they're just playing this kind of ominous music. And we're all getting excited. We're seeing, is that like a runway that comes out of the stage? It's hard to see much. It gets very smoky in there. And I'm swearing that I see someone wearing a ninja mask in like the back wall. And we, Matt and myself and Emily, debated for about 10 minutes if there's a ninja back there. And it was a ninja, but it was not the lead singer of Wednesday Campanella, which is, I thought it was her. Which all night long there are these people just, instead of like just shaking the background for her, there's like this big blanket behind the stage, or instead of having like a machine just twirl around and like do a light show, there's like people holding these things. And the funny thing was, like, they weren't like part of the show. It wasn't like performance art. They're like all dressed in black, like with masks or like hats on to try to like blend in, but they definitely weren't blending in. So it was kind of funny to have like this half, either like have them as part of the show or use a machine. I thought it was kind of a funny element, but it brought a very like handcrafted kind of low budget feel to it. It doesn't take away from the quality though. The quality of it was good. It just, I don't know, for some reason, sometimes it kind of took me out of the zone a bit. But anyway, yeah, so she starts off, comes out on stage by herself. Remember, the two producers, not there at all. I don't know if they're like hiding in back or at the soundboard or something, but it almost kind of feels like they're just playing the track, you know, on iTunes to a bit. Some of the songs were kind of remixed or made special just for this show. But sometimes, yeah, for me, it's a little bit different from kind of music I usually go to see. Generally, there's a DJ doing it live there, or a band playing their own music, you know? So I do think it was the first show I've ever been to where there were like backing tracks, which for Matt and I both kind of were like, I don't know how I feel about this, but it kind of makes up for it in a lot of other ways. I also want to say that I've seen Wednesday Campanella before at Fuji Rock 2 years ago. Definitely one of the highlights of the show, or reason why I wanted to come back and see the show again. Also, the show is $45 or 4,500 yen. That's kind of cheap for someone of her status in Japan. I would typically expect somewhere closer to 70 or 80 for that kind of show. So between seeing her before, loving her music, even though her last two albums or EPs are definitely a downgrade for me, it was still a no-brainer. And she started off really, really slow. She kind of like eased in and very vocally heavy, not a lot of, you know, music, very low BPMs on the first track, but it was just cool. You know, you're just so excited to see them. And her, you know, her voice sounds really, really good. And then she jumps in on the second track to stuff off the new album. It's more upbeat. And really the first thing I think we all kind of noticed was like her dance moves. Very constrained for the first couple songs. Like, she's in a tight box and she's not really getting out of that box much. And they're definitely the kind of dance moves that, it's definitely dancing like no one's watching, which is a phrase I've always liked, and I like that concept. But it was almost like
dancing when people are watching, but you don't want them to see you, if that makes sense. So be like, I'm at a party, I want to dance because like it's lame to not dance, but I don't want to dance to a level where I'm going to get any attention. So I'm just going to like do my thing here and not attract any attention. That's kind of the vibe I was getting at first, which was really funny to see someone on a stage with lights on doing, you know? She seems awkward. And I don't know if that's part of the performance piece or maybe she's just a little bit of a socially awkward person. But the weird thing is I've seen her before, both, you know, on YouTube and in person, where she's been pretty wild and out and like a real, I don't know, kind of like enjoying the spotlight, it seemed like. So it was really interesting. And instantly, like third song in, I was like, this is like a completely different musician, completely different artist from what I saw 2 years ago at Fuji Rock. And one of my favorite videos you can check out on YouTube is her South by Southwest performance. I think that's maybe 4 years ago or so. And she's really wild, like just in the streets of Austin, you know, like with the people following her around, like marching around, parading. She's done a live show at a track before where she's like running around the track. And she's done really big like halls, kind of more theatrical type stuff. So she's got so much range, which is probably the thing I respect the most about her and the group together, is you can go see them on different tours and it just feels like a different artist. So that keeps it exciting. Although if you do, as you can tell, you know, I have my favorite version, like the 2014 version of the group. You know, it is sad that you maybe don't get to see that again, but that's kind of Japan. Japan's a bit seasonal and things change and keep you on your toes. So kind of the fast forward a bit. The first half of the show, I'm going to guess the show is about an hour and 20 minutes long, hour and 15 minutes. No opening group at all. So, you know, you pay your $45 or 4,500 yen and you just get the one group, no opening act. And when the show's done, they kind of kick you out pretty fast too. So that is, you know, a unique experience. Not all shows are like that, but it's definitely not uncommon to be like this. And it starts at 7 o'clock. A lot of people work here until like 6. So to get there by 7 could be tough for a lot of people. For me, it was tough, even though a lot of times I can get out at like 3:30 or 4 if I want to, but it was tough. Anyway, sidebar there. Sorry about that. First half of the show, I was a little bit worried because, again, I'm having a good time. I was really in the mood. This show got me through my whole week, but I have, I don't know, high expectations, and I've seen her before, so it's hard to not compare. And I was like, this is fun. This is great. I'm liking this. It's a good time. How could it not be? But this, what I've seen so far, is the weakest live performance I've seen by her. But I knew there's theatrics. And I told Emily before the show started, I said, there's three theatrics she's been doing in recent years. One is she does the classic, like, flaming lips, go out into the ball, and the audience carries you. She did that at Fuji Rock. So I was like, all right, if we get that, I'll be happy. I know she uses ladders a lot and climbs up ladders and gets out into the crowd, like off the stage, kind of for the people in the back, which is really cool. I like it when artists, you know, try to meet everyone's needs. If she does that, I'd be happy. And then she does stuff with like a blanket fabric. I don't know what to call it. A big piece of fabric that like she overlays on the crowd. And yeah, I've seen that before, pictures of that and stuff, but I was like, that would be really cool to experience live. It's, you know, that's one, like, if you kind of have to be in the moment to really get it, I think. So about halfway through, she goes behind this fabric that has been behind the stage the whole time, and you start to see her silhouette. She's doing all these cool silhouette moves and stuff. So that was cool. Again, there's already been all this crazy light stuff happening throughout. So cool. There's like a whole another element in there. And they're playing like this real like trap heavy, like modern heavy hip hop, which is totally different from the rest of the show. I started feeling it, you know, it's Friday night, and yeah, the energy started hitting heavy, and then they released the blanket, or the fabric, and people start rolling it out, and for me, you know, because I kind of previewed it before, I knew exactly what was happening. Matt had mentioned, like, he thought maybe it was, like, a malfunction, or something was wrong, or he didn't know, so that's probably more what it'd be like if you didn't know. So that's, what a cool feeling is that. So they start, like, rolling it back, and I start thinking, we're pretty far back, we're probably, like, standing room only, but we're probably like 40 rows deep. I'm just thinking like, man, we got to get under that. If you're not under the blanket, you're just going to be watching this blanket move around with a bunch of people having a party inside. Like, you got to get under there. So I kind of start to like push forward a little bit to make sure we get in there. But I mean, everyone was doing that. Anyway, we get in, no problem. And it's just right away, it's, you know, I've never been under a blanket or fabric with like a couple hundred other people before, you know? And you know, it's winter time here, so it's very warm, felt good. And what I noticed right away is there's this interactive element, like anything I've ever seen before at a show, where you have to like hold the blanket up in order to see things. So you're kind of having like work together. Emily and Matt were giving me a hard time saying I wasn't doing my part, especially as a taller person, right? You can really hold it up well. But my head was higher than most people's hands around me, so I just felt my head was holding it up. But anyway, later I did realize, oh man, I gotta lift it up to help out the people. But yeah, it was just so cool. But she's still pretty far away from us at that point, so she's just getting used to all that, and it's great. And then she comes out the ladder under the fabric thing, and that was cool. And she's very close to us. I think it was about eight feet away. So she's up on this ladder singing, and like the way that the fabric drapes down is like she's like craning her neck down to like to come like see you, you know? And it's, I don't know how to put it. It's a very intimate experience, like just under the blankets of someone, you know, that you've seen pictures of online and stuff before, with all these people, all these strangers around you. Yeah, it sounds simple, and I knew the concept before going in, but experiencing it was just something totally different, right? And it's like you are working with this artist or this musician. They're like kind of like giving you like a look in their eyes, like, hey man, hey tall guy out there, can you hold this fabric up for me so like people can see me and I can like see out on you guys? Because if not, it's just drooping down, right? So yeah, that, to be honest, the songs she was singing at that point were some, for me, like just kind of her slower, more ballady type stuff that I'm not really into. But all the other elements, right, took it to another level. So it's kind of cool she can, for me, use the more exciting songs, the songs I like, and just kind of do more of a standard performance, and you're just loving it because of the song. But then on some of the kind of slower songs that personally I'm not that into, there is this kind of interactive theatrical element keeping your attention. So then she goes to a second ladder, which is much, much taller. I'm going to guess 25 feet or so, and jumps from ladder to another, goes up there. She's totally no shoes, no socks. And I just kind of like had this moment. Then again, she's even closer to us now. Like she's wearing like this peacock sequence capey thing with cow print pants, no shoes, up on a ladder, like 25 feet high with planets all around it. Like, what is this? This peacock elf lady. I'm under a blanket. I just, where am I? How did I get here? Like kind of moment, you know? And it was just, yeah, so, so cool. And she's up there like blowing off the dust from this building. Has gotta be, I don't know, 70, 80 years old. You know, it's very old. Maybe not that old. I'm just thinking like, how old is this dust? And she's like just wiping off of their hands and like blowing it as if it's like fairy dust or something down on below us. And just so funny, so eccentric and cool. And yeah, then she like went all the way like to the backside entrance and made a secret like escape. Like they built this like kind of bubble thing. Kind of reminded me of Epcot Center, if you know what that is, if you're American. And the lights in there were cool, and she's inside of there. And I thought we're gonna have some like costume change, like kind of the grand finale, you know? But they kind of like just made it small, and she was gone, and we didn't see her. And then Matt kind of joked, like, oh, she went out the secret exit before we actually like realized the show was done. And then, yeah, that was it. So I would say it felt like there should be one more thing. Like, I kind of felt it was a little bit anticlimactic in some way, like it was really building and building and building. But she didn't perform like one of her big great songs at the end. There was no encore. It's just kind of like, oop, there she goes. And that was it. So yeah, all in all, that was kind of the concert review. Second half really, to me, kind of saved that first half, which was nothing wrong with the first half. It was just a little bit safe from what I've seen with her. But now looking back on it all, you know, it's great that it kind of like amps up, you know, and there's increments of greatness along the way. So I
can't recommend seeing her more. Again, I've seen her twice in person. I watched her online. Every time is like a different experience. Hopefully you like the music that we've selected so far. And if you're in the Kansai area and get a chance to go to Universe, go on their website. It doesn't even matter. Just go see anything there. The kind of crowd they attract, the kind of artists that go there are the coolest people. So yeah, if there's a weird line system, that's the worst part. From there on, it's pretty amazing. So it was one of those shows where like I woke up the next morning, which is just a couple hours before I'm recording this, and like all these like crazy visions of what happened last night are there, and I just like want to listen to her. And it was one of those live shows, you know. She mostly played stuff off the Galapagos album, her most recent album, that for me was the least favorite of all of the things she's put out so far. But like seeing it live kind of brought this understanding to it. And I don't own it on vinyl. As you, if you're a long time listener, you know we're big vinyl collectors. Matt has the vinyl. I've had many chances to get it. It's a pretty easy one to get. And I've been sleeping on it, but I think seeing this live show kind of showed me the appeal to the album, and I understand. I had my aha moment. It's just slower and a little more artsy, and sometimes I'm not always in the mood for that. But I think I've just heard it enough times now where it kind of really set in. So yeah, awesome show. Still, I love live music in Japan. This is the reason why. This is a great example of how good music can get here. So that's a wrap for this show. We're on all the social media you can imagine. Instagram tends to be where we're the most active and get the most people writing us. We always say this, but we're kind of really to the point now where we're really blown away by just the amount of people that we're kind of getting to meet from the show, finding out. Our first audience was kind of more people abroad. Matt and I are both American, and we tend to reference the States a lot. So we're getting a lot of kind of Americans early on, but yeah, now we're getting other people, you know, living in Japan and stuff. So that's pretty cool. We met up with a listener recently, about 2 weeks ago, and had a really, really great time with him and showed him one of our favorite local neighborhoods. So for me, that was the first listener kind of meetup we've ever done before. Matt's done one, which we have a podcast about. But it was such a cool experience. Very unique for sure, and we hope to have many more. Apparently we had another listener who was actually at the Wednesday Campanella show and let us know after seeing some of the videos we put up. So yeah, please, if you ever see us or hear our voices out in public, if you're in the area, definitely let us know. Come talk with us, or if you're gonna be in the area or something, or you know of a cool show going on. We do get people telling us about live events that even if they can't meet us there, you know, they're saying, yeah, I wish I was in Osaka and I could go here. So yeah, just keep contacting us. It means a lot for us. Whenever we're having a, you know, not even a bad day, or just a regular day, you know, you're tired at your job, those messages, we're still at the point where even though we're getting more and more, you know, Matt and I always message us, hey, did you see what so-and-so wrote here and there? And that's so cool and so nice. And all the positives, all the comments we get are always so positive and great. So keep them coming. We'd love to hear them. So thank you so much for listening, and hopefully you learned something new about Japan today. And yeah, go listen to some Wednesday Campanella. See everyone.
が広がる生まれはモンゴル800円の一押しジンギスカン定食森は大井が足ふつだけどランチのサービスはスマイルと芽吹の絡める季節の野菜の上走る無邪気に笑う羊たち沈黙渦を踊り狂い油大田市肉汁落とさず旨味きもうご飯残るあの幼少期から慣れ親しんできたこの味広めユラシアの歴史に名を残すこの店の名前覚えたけジンギスカン それがジンギスカン って店繁盛、勢いに乗ってババに2号店エコダに3号店。
分
けして兄弟が始めた姉妹店のナフビライ飯店。テテしたいのはエセメラム肉まらなく薬対策して、大一号なの不正法な王様のブランチも注目してる。うちのランチにみんな中毒で腹ほろヒレハレジンギスカンダレ、何もヤバいもんなんか入ってない、うまい肉野菜が空腹セイス、ユラシアの激震に名を残すこの店の名前覚えとけジンギスカン。白木